Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author JV Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I'll feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis that specialize in a plethora of art forms. And I have another writer on with us for this evening. I'll introduce him in a few seconds. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com. Or follow me at JV Hilliard Books on X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or just JV Hilliard on Discord and Facebook. And as we reach our witching hour, I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to www.alteredrealitymag.com. It is a community for speculative fiction and speculative poetry, and you'll find a variety of creatives that are there that range from authors that write about sci-fi or horror or cryptids and monsters to dystopian fantasy and young adult stuff, as well as speculative poetry. Really cool community. And they've got, you know, folks that are finding their first opportunity for publication all the way up to award-winning authors. Check them out at alteredrealitymag.com. And before we get started tonight, want to talk a little bit about us chronicling our guest this evening, Eric Malachite. He also is a speculative fiction scribe, and I will welcome him to the show now. Eric, well met, and welcome to the realm.
Well met, indeed. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. And tell our listeners a little bit about you, the kind of stuff you write, and where they might be able to find you.
Oh, I'm a total cosmic horror, cyberpunk, and dark fantasy nerd. But, like, I'm a nerd for so many different things because I don't know if you know this about me, but I have ADHD. So, you know, I love the original Alien. I grew up on that stuff. Terminator, you know, Star Wars, you name it, Dragon Ball Z, fucking all sorts of stuff. Can I curse on this?
You just did, and it's okay.
Okay. I stopped myself for a second. I'm like, oh, wait, this is... You know, because
no, we're all right. We're all right. This isn't, yeah, right, yeah, no one's going to come and censor you. You're totally fine, man. Keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, I just have a passion for storytelling and analyzing stories from an honest perspective because I feel like doing that helps me improve my own craft. And primarily right now, I'm working in a lot of science fiction, cyberpunk and cosmic horror, and sort of blending those genres together because, you know, the original Alien is kind of like the grandpappy of a cyber, the subgenre of cyber Cthulhu. If you've ever heard about it, there are a few different books out there that are similar to this. I just got done reading a fantastic book called Blindsight by Peter Watts. That's pretty fantastic, fits in this genre. And I just, my mind, it can't help but go there, you know, when we're dealing with science fiction stuff and cyberpunk realities and things. But yeah, I got started with fiction probably around 2011. I was studying for art school and what have you, and I was getting really burnt out during this program and just started reading up on a lot of different stuff from, like, Roger Zelazny and off the top of my head, Ray Bradbury, of course, is a huge influence. I got really into Neil Gaiman and stuff like that. And I grew up reading comic books. So Paul Dini is one of my favorite Batman writers and things like that. So, like, I grew up on speculative media in general, and I've just developed a real passion for it over the years. And I just can't shut my brain up anyway. So, you know, I'm going to write as many books as I possibly can on the subject.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, man. And our backgrounds are similar, it sounds like. I mean, I come from a more of a dark fantasy, epic fantasy realm, but I have an appreciation for, I just saw the new Alien movie. We could talk about that too if you want, but
oh yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Aliens of the group, I think Aliens was the my favorite, but Aliens started it all. But you mentioned something in there about Cyber Cthulhu. I think that's a really cool, so a lot of folks that are listening may get that, but for those that don't know what that is, explain to them what you mean by that, because I think you're taking a couple of genres here and smashing them together to create a really specific subgenre. But if you don't mind spending about, 30 seconds or so kind of defining it for those that are listening, I think that
oh,
might
yeah,
be
absolutely.
Helpful.
Yeah. So Cyber Cthulhu, when I say that, or there are a couple of other different terms you can use for it. I got schooled on Reddit for all the different applicable terms when I was asking for recommendations one time. But it's basically when you merge stuff like Blade Runner or Ghost in the Shell with Lovecraftian cosmic horror. And it doesn't have to be the occult variety or what have you. It can be purely scientific cosmic horror, you know. So Alien actually fits into this category pretty well because its themes, and I did a hour-long video essay on my Story Rant channel on YouTube that goes into the minutia of that. So the short version is Alien is basically a cosmic horror film, but it exists in a cyberpunk reality. The people that are on the Nostromo, Ripley, Ash, Lambert, and all those wonderful people are basically blue-collar workers, and they're essentially oppressed by the cyberpunk megacorporation of Weyland-Yutani. The only reason they go down to LV-426 in the first place is to investigate this life form. They don't have a choice, though. They refuse at first. In fact, I think Parker is the one who complains the most, saying, you know, unless I get paid extra, I'm not going down there. And he's like, well, you know, if you don't go, there's no money. So there's an element of, you know, corporate abuse there, where it's the whole high-tech, low-life thing, where corporations get so powerful that they rule our lives to such an extent. And the new movie has a lot to do with this. I have complicated thoughts on that. I also put out a review for that a few weeks ago as well. But what's brilliant about Alien is that while it doesn't deal with the supernatural forces of, say, that you will find in, you know, Colorado Space or The Call of Cthulhu, any of H.P. Lovecraft's works, its themes are quintessential cosmic horror. The idea that we were not meant to voyage far, that going out into the black of space is inherently dangerous for us because we're like squishy, you know, we're a speck in an infinite ocean of stars, that sort of thing. And I just love that idea because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but humanity is kind of big-headed. We think we're the top dogs, and sometimes it's nice to be taken down a peg, you know, and have some perspective.
Yeah, I was listening to a scientist who was on a YouTube channel, and he said, you know, imagine us a million years from now, and there are cultures out there in not just our galaxy, but in the many galaxies around that have a million year head start on us. You know, and his thought was, you know, because this was a, you know, sort of like a, you know, an argument as to whether or not we should be reaching out, asking for people to contact us. And his thought was, it's a really bad idea. And you see that a lot with, you know, Alien, and it's, you know, in this case, you get what it, in some cases, appears to be an unintelligible creature. And you find out later, oh no, it's not. And it's, you know, it has its own kind of, and I also like the way you kind of spun up, you know, like for me, cyberpunk, when I think of cyberpunk stuff, I think of Alita Battle Angel and things of that nature too, even
oh,
though
it certainly fits.
Yeah, it's a good fit without the aliens, right? You know, but it's right. Again, you get these big corporations, this, you know, 1% society that's moved off the planet that they've polluted to this other world or things like that. And I think that's really cool. How do you bake that into what you write though? Tell us about a little bit about your work.
So my first novel was Echoes of Olympus Mons, and it was basically this genre. And I was pretty green, but I'm doing a re-release with Macabre Inc. later this year. It should be almost done, actually. And the whole premise was it took place in 2045. Humanity just got out, you know, World War III just went into a lull, you know, and they think it's over. And the main character and his friend got accepted to this amazing opportunity at this corporate, you know, college on Mars called Olympus One. And it's at the base of Olympus Mons. And But there's rumors that, you know, Milky Way Unlimited, the mega corporation that owns the place, will sort of snipe out patents underneath students. So
what a great name, by the way, Milky Way Incorporated. I love it.
Milky Way Unlimited. Yeah.
Unlimited. Sorry. Yeah. Unlimited.
I'm working on the second booklet right now, and they are ruthless, let me tell you. But anyway, they start working on a camera that's able to image what Hal thinks is dark matter. And they start seeing repeating patterns in the dark matter. And Hal comes from a religious background. He's a very complicated character. He's got a lot of trauma in his past. His father was a religious wacko and abused him in ways. But that's influenced a lot of his flawed thinking when it comes to approaching this experiment and this device. And he notices that there are other things in what he calls the dark matter web. And they're staring back at him. And then people around him start dying. And they have no idea what these things are. Right? They appear like mantis shapes in the dark matter web, but nobody can see them. And that's basically the premise right there. And we take it to, you know, sort of a Lovecraftian end. I won't spoil it or anything, but...
Oh, please don't.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Don't worry. Okay. But the new edition is coming out soon. I didn't even have to do a lot of corrections. My editor, who's worked with me for years, Phoenix Bunky, she's amazing when it comes to copy editing. Most of the errors you might find in like Mind's Horizon or something like that are my fault because I missed something.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, because you have, I mean, obviously we've talked about cosmic horror and this Cyber Cthulhu subgenre. Mm-hmm. Clearly you're steeped in it. What are some of your favorite things about it? You know, I mean, what are the things that attract you to this? Because it's a really specific genre. It's not like me where you can get away. I guess I write an epic and dark fantasy, but in the end, it's really kind of the same thing, except, maybe the good guys don't always win, you know, and there's very little, it's hard for even me to explain the difference between epic fantasy and classic fantasy and sword and sorcery and all these little subgenres. You have to know,
right?
You these little niche ideas and philosophies behind them to really dig deep. You know, what's brought you to this very specific genre? What I don't want to say inspiration as much as I want to say what's drawn you to it? What is the attraction to it for you?
I mean, part of it's just ADHD, man. You know, my brain starts going, that's where my brain goes. I mean, even in my Lovecraftian occult cosmic horror, I involve technology in that. My new book that's coming out next year, that's a follow-up to Mind's Horizon, it deals a lot with AI and for-profit colleges and stuff like that. It's set in 2024 on an alternate Earth from the first book or what have you. That's a whole thing. But it still deals with a lot of those same themes and I guess technologies and things that I have questions about. One of the things that brings me back to cyberpunk and makes me want to mix in cosmic horror because I'm a nerd is when I first saw Alien and Aliens and The Thing, I fell in love. I fell in love with that world and I wanted to know why that was. And it's not that Alien by itself as a film, it's a masterpiece in my opinion, but the elements that like sort of set my brain on fire where I'm like, ooh, I want more of that. Those are the magic elements right there. Plus I'm a sucker for ancient alien civilizations, Lovecraftian ones at least. And Alien does that better than pretty much any film that has ever tried to do At the Mountains of Madness. Prometheus doesn't get it right. No one gets it right. Alien, that small segment in the space jockey ship, just like, there's something about that right there that just sets my imagination on fire.
Well, yeah. First of all, you look at it from the perspective that it's a small group. It seems insignificant. The mission itself also seems insignificant. And then you learn there's this entire thing around it that isn't, right? The corporation knows, Wayland knows. You find out through the prequels and the subsequent sequels and, you know, the all that other kind of stuff that this is – been going on for a while, and it actually builds out a nice little story, but you start myopically looking through this, you know, the tunnel of what was his name, Dallas, or whoever's the was the the captain of the ship. I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was Dallas.
Yeah, there you go. Like you get that, and you don't even know their first names half the time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's just all you, and they're just calling each other by their last names, and you get that kind of feeling. And I'm glad you brought up the thing because I noticed in my research that you described something that you've written as modern Ice Age horror. And yeah. Mine's Horizon. And I was going to say The Thing. Man, the Kurt Russell, that 1982, it's whatever so good. It was. My God, what a great remake. I mean, I saw the old one. And I guess within its domain, you know, at that time, if you look at it through the time horizon through which it was created, it was a scary movie back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But when The Thing came out, that Kurt Russell thing, oh, man, is that just, you know, that Halloween, like you could hear that music, that simple, and it still scares me every time that's on. I can't turn it off, and I think it's really well cast. But tell us about, I mean, was that somewhere in your planning for this modern Ice Age horror kind of thing you did with the Mind's Horizon? Yeah, tell us about that a little bit, because I think that's I want to hear more about that now that you brought it up, because I would have not connected The Thing to Alien until you just did. And I'm like, oh, I get where he's going with this now.
Yeah, yeah. So Mind's Horizon was kind of my first book. It came out second. It came out after Olympus Mons. But Mind's Horizon was the first one. And my idea going into that was kind of taking people from my age group, millennials, and saying, well, if these people did survive a global, Ice Age, which is the rarest type of Ice Age. It's called Snowball Earth Theory, basically. And it happened about 2 billion years ago, if my scientific knowledge is correct. Usually it is. And essentially, everyone's being pushed to the equator when the ice sheets spread, you know. But I wanted to create this contentious group that were kind of like the people in The Thing. It's a different story, don't get me wrong. Because it surrounds sort of this, well, I'm going to have to tell you a little bit about the premise so you know the difference between the two. But they are a contentious group. They're at each other's throats a lot of the time. There was a second American Civil War. And no, I had no idea which direction politics were going to take as I was writing it. I did not have any clue. It has nothing to do with that. But and the causes for it are kind of ambiguous in the story. But there are members of this sort of unlikely family of survivors that are living underground in the Riverside, California ruins that fought on both sides. So they have natural tension between each other. And the main character, Ira, discovers that there is a heat signature in the San Bernardino Mountains and decides to head off on her own with a couple of other people who live with her and check it out, see if it's some kind of new shelter or something. What they discover is an underground occult / government military research station. It's kind of all three. And this ties into the OEI stories that I've been writing for the Books of Cthulhu stuff with C.T. Phipps and that whole amazing gang that have accepted me into their group and what have you. This weird organization that has been cataloging Lovecraftian stuff, basically the remnants is what they discover. And they think this is a shelter, and they're completely unprepared for the horrors that are within this basically pyramid buried beneath the San Bernardino Mountains.
Well, you know, you have a real eclectic palette here, man. I know I brought you on because you're an author, but I'm assuming you've got to have ambition for some of this stuff to hit the silver screen or the small screen.
I love that.
Or so, that's almost an entirely separate show. I mean, I can wax poetic about, I like the, you know, of course I have a big crush on Mary Elizabeth Winstead. The most recent thing that came out from the Norwegian perspective, you talked about here, the Cthulhu, and I'm thinking about the HBO stuff that ran a couple of years ago in its first season. You know, would you like to see your stuff? I mean, is that
oh,
the
absolutely.
ultimate goal here, the adaptation into a different form of medium? And, you know,
absolutely.
Are you planning on that, or is that just sort of like Hail Mary pass and see if it happens?
If it happens, it happens. I mean, I have an eye for like film techniques and stuff like that. I am familiar with script writing techniques and what have you. It's not my main like forte, but I do know people that work at least in independent film, and we've been throwing some ideas around about getting some OEI like short films off the ground or something. It's later on down the line, because I'm still kind of building my platform and what have you. And I'm really busy with YouTube stuff, let me tell you. But it is a goal. I mean, I never like to repeat myself when it comes to sequels within a series. I like to do something new and different. And one of the reasons for that, and it kind of goes back to why we have diminishing returns with sequels in films, and this is something I go into in that Alien video essay, is that especially with cosmic horror, the entities in cosmic horror are scary because you don't understand them. If you're looking at it from the perspective of an iceberg, what you know is the peak above the water. Everything that you're not supposed to know is beneath it, and it should go on infinitely if you're doing your job right. One of the problems I have with Prometheus and with Alien Covenant is it tries to explain too much about these organisms that really, the more we find out about them, the more horrifying they should become, in my opinion, at least. And that's the approach that I take to my cosmic horror sequels as well. If we're dealing with a similar entity, you're never going to learn everything that you want to learn about these things, because that'll ruin the horror. You reveal too much of the monster, it's kind of like Jaws, it's like Alien, it's like anything. Modern horror films show the monsters too much, you know?
Or the CGI takes over as opposed to leaving. Amityville Horror scared me. The Thing scared me. Alien scared me, and I barely saw it. Right. And that was the horror of the unknown. I 100% agree. You know, when they sometimes movies are ruined by CGI. Like, I don't need to see, you know, the cave troll or the dragon spread. Like, I get it. I'd rather that almost be left to the imagination. I 100% agree. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. Finish your thought there, but I just wanted to weigh in, because I think it's worth noting that I 100% agree on that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my stuff is a little more niche, one might say. You know, I mean, I do work in dark fantasy as well, but I mix in that Lovecraftian stuff because I can't fucking help it.
Yeah, you can't stay away from it. That's cool. Well, look, we're coming to the end of the show, and I always run everyone through a kind of a lightning round, and I think you and sure I could wax poetic on here and talk for another half an hour if we needed
probably.
To. Maybe that's something we should come back and talk about, you know, some of these movies and or books that have become movies. But that aside, I want to run you through a lightning round. But before I do, I want you to give some advice to aspiring authors that are out there, whether they're in your genre or not, because a lot of our listeners are not just readers and folks that are other creators. Many of them are authors themselves. And, you know, as an author, someone who's spun up your own career doing this stuff, can you give them, you know, a piece of advice or two that you would, you know, just, you know, free, friendly, you know, pat on the back and tell them, please do this or please don't do that?
I'd say, number one, plant your butt in the chair and write, obviously. Number two, be open to criticism. Because one of the best things you can do is not be overly critical of your work, but the way you improve is to consider other people's point of view on your work. You know, I think the last year or so, as I've been refining my work on short stories and with my latest projects, I've improved a lot compared to where I was when those first few books came out. I'm really happy where I'm going, but where I am right now, but there's always room to improve. You can always be a better writer. And that's a great goal to have. You should always want to be a better writer. If you know, your craft is never mastered. If it was, it'd be boring, right? The fun part is the creating and getting excited to create new things and to delve into your universe and world build and create your characters and your plots and what have you. Be fucking passionate about it, you know, and be honest with yourself about what you enjoy creating, you know.
Yep, I got you, man. Well, look, we're going to go into the lightning round. I got three or four questions we're going to throw at you. And if you stump me or you surprise me, we'll go a little deeper. But let's see how this goes. So are you ready to play?
I'm terrible on the spot, but let's do it.
All right, well, we'll see how it goes. We'll wing it if we need to. If you came with a warning label, what would it say?
Oh, God. ADHD. Bring whiskey.
Well, there you go. That works. That works fine. Works totally fine. So if you were able to invite any author, living or dead, to a lunch, who would it be and why?
Oh, it would be Roger Zelazny. I'd love to sit down and play some D&D with him. Apparently, before he died, he was getting really into tabletop gaming. It sounds like he would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know what? I used to work at a B. Dalton bookseller back in the day, before, you know, all the mergers and the Walden and everybody went out of business and it became Borders and Barnes and Noble. But Zelazny was always one of those. I mean, once every ship, someone would come in looking for that stuff. So that's well played. Well played.
It might have been.
All right. So, nah.
Well, I'm a big Chronicles of Amber fan.
There you go. Well, what is, as an author, what's the best money you've ever spent and what is the worst money you've ever spent?
Buying or paying for a good editor and a great editor goes a long way. But, you know, when I first started out, I hired this artist who did the first cover, which was fine on Echoes, but he kind of stiffed me for like $400 by not finishing the one for Mind's Horizon. I had to do it myself, essentially. And a good buddy, Eric Lottie, actually helped me out on that for one of the versions of the covers. But so, yeah, shout out to him.
Cool. There's a library and it's on fire and you rush in to help, but you find out that you could only save one book in the library and it can't be one of yours. Which book would you save and why would you save it?
Necronomicon?
Whoa, man. Oh man. That came out real almost too quickly.
No.
No, seriously. If Necronomicon works, it works, man. That's all right. That's what I'm asking. That's what the button you're on is for.
We'll go with that.
That's cool. Last question, and this is one I wasn't going to ask, but I feel like if I don't ask, I'm going to hate myself for not asking. I was reading your bio, and on your bio, you say you like to terrorize the neighborhood children on Halloween. What does that mean? Because it sounds like there's a deep-rooted story there, and I need to know.
All right, so it was a couple Halloweens ago because we had to move into our new house that we bought. We are free of landlords now. But before that, my mother-in-law gets all the kids up by her house in Richmond. And so I put on this faceless alien mask, right? And I put on cultist robes and I've got like demon claws, right? And I'm just like, okay, just put the candy bowl in my hands. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to pretend to be animatronic. And I'm still, I'm completely still. And my wife's in like this adorable inflatable fucking T-Rex costume and everything. Oh, the kids are just, they get one look at me and they're just like, uh-uh, fuck this, I'm out. And they're just
I'm not going next week.
Right? And so they come up to me and they're really hesitant to reach into the candy bowl and get their candy. And, you know, my mother-in-law and my wife, they're saying, no, it's okay. He's not real. Don't worry. And they're like, is he real? Oh. Is that real? And then I lunge toward them really quickly and they're like screaming and running away. And I probably gave so many kids nightmares in broad daylight. It is one of my finest achievements, I think.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I love that. I love it because of two reasons. One, Halloween, you're supposed to be scared. So you're doing a good job. So hats off to you there. Two, make them earn it. You want that candy, kid? You're going to earn it. You know, come on in. Let's see how far this rabbit hole goes. So, well, look, we're coming to the end of the show here. But before I let you go, Eric, tell everybody where they can find your books and how they could follow you on social media.
Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook. You can just type my name in here. There's probably going to be the correct spelling. It's spelled E-R-I-C for Eric. And then Malachite is spelled M-A-L-I-K-Y-T-E. And you can find me on YouTube by checking out Story Rant. You can check me out on Top 10. Well, not in Top 10s anymore. That's my buddy Carl who's hosting that. But Geographics, Biographics. I'm on Twitter, of course, twitter.com/Eric Malachite. I have a mailing list. You can get a free copy of the old edition of Echoes Olympus Mons right now if you sign up to that. And yeah, just check me out on YouTube. Check some of my video essays out and check me out on Amazon, Smashwords. I'm pretty much all over that. We're going to be re-releasing all of my self-published books with Macabre Inc. eventually. And it's going to be fun. And next year, we're going to have a bunch of new stuff. But you can also check out the short stories that are currently in the Books of Cthulhu anthologies as well. Tales of Nyarlathotep is out right now, and Book of Hastur is coming out this month, I believe on the 24th. I'm not 100% sure on that, though.
Well, thank you, my friend, for coming on. I really want you to come back on when you've got the next work coming out, so let us know. Happy to have you back on the show. And for those listening, thank you for lending us your ear this evening. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.